listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll enjoy James Stewart starring in The Six Shooter. But first, on the lighter side toward Halloween, it's time for the adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. Ozzie and Harriet Nelson premiered on CBS in October of 1944. A New Jersey native, Ozzie had formed his first orchestra at 14, then worked his way through college and law school playing proms and balls. He graduated from Rutgers and emerged from academia with a law degree. Harriet came out of Iowa, where her stage work inevitably led to Hollywood, where as Harriet Hilliard, she signed a contract with Paramount and appeared as a dancer in the 1932 short Musical Justice. Ozzie Nelson caught Harriet's act in Musical Justice, asked her to join the band. Ozzie and Harriet began the second phase of their joint career in a new radio situation comedy entitled The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. The first three seasons aired on CBS for International Silver. They made their way to television. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet in The Haunted House from October of 1948. Another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Mar, Jameis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
Hollywood, International Silver Company, creators of 1847 Rogers Brothers Silver Plate, presents The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, starring America's favorite young couple, Ozzie Nelson and Harriet Hilliard. Hey, there's excitement in the air. A mysterious change has taken place in the vicinity of 1847 Rogers Road. Remember the friendly old elm tree in front of the house? Well, it doesn't look friendly anymore. The full moon shining through it, and on one of the bare branches, there's a big black owl. And the old dependable weather vane on top of the garage. Gee, it looks different now. I'm not sure if it's a weather vane or not, the way the shadows fall. Could be a witch on a broomstick. Oh, it's spooky out tonight. In the Nelson kitchen, there's an atmosphere of feverish activity and excited preparations.
What are you looking for, David?
We're trying to find some paper bags, big ones.
Well, look in the bottom drawer there.
There, that's a good one, Ricky.
Yeah, but what do I do with the potatoes?
No, not that drawer, Ricky, on the other side.
Hey, what's going on out here?
We're getting some paper bags.
Sound like you were taking the kitchen apart.
It's Halloween, boy. We're going to have fun tonight, Pop.
Yeah, it looks plenty spooky out to me.
What do you have there, dear?
Oh, I was just rummaging around upstairs a bit, and I thought the boys might make a costume out of these old work pants.
Gee, Pop, they're pretty dirty. Not only that, dear, they're covered with paint.
Well, what do you expect, Harriet? I wore them when I painted the breakfast nook.
I think you did a better job on the pants than you did on the breakfast nook.
How about you, Ricky? Would you like to be a painter? We could get your white cap and stick a couple of brushes in your belt.
Golly, Pa, those pants are pretty big.
Oh, I don't know. Let's see how they look on you. Here, step into them. Put your foot in there. Yeah. Now the other foot. Now pull them up.
Oh, that's a wonderful costume. The headless painter.
Anyhow, Pop, we don't need costumes. We got masks. That's enough.
Well, you suit yourself. We used to wear costumes when I was a kid.
That's just for little kids, Pop. Me and David are going trick-or-treat.
Trick-or-treat?
Sure. We ring a guy's doorbell and say trick-or-treat. If he doesn't give us cookies or something, we let him have it.
There you are, dear. That's Halloween, 1948.
Sounds more like Chicago, 1925.
It's a lot of fun, Pop. Didn't you used to do that when you were a kid?
No, David. As I recall, we used to go in more for the real spirit of Halloween. You know, the spooky, scary stuff.
What do you mean, Pop?
Oh, I mean, we'd find some old haunted house and go prowling around looking for ghosts and stuff.
You sure were brave, Pop.
Oh, not necessarily, David.
Pop, did you ever see a ghost?
Oh, I won't say I saw a ghost, but I will say I saw something.
A spook?
I don't know. It was white and shimmering, indistinct. It wavered back and forth. Sometimes it was there, sometimes it wasn't there. White and shimmering.
Do they have television sets then, Pop?
No, Ricky, this was right out in the center of the living room. I'm afraid Halloween's different nowadays. All the wonderful, spooky, hobgoblin atmosphere, that's all changed now. Can't help feeling a little sad when you see the joys of your childhood disappearing in a changing world. Halloween just isn't exciting anymore.
Are you gonna cry, Pop?
No, dear. Just the memories coming back.
You sure must have had fun, Pop. Do you think there's really such a thing as a ghost? A real ghost, I mean?
Well, I don't know. In a spooky old house with the moon shining through the broken shutters, you imagine you see some pretty strange things.
I'd sure like to see a ghost. Boy, would I run.
Well, there's the old McAdams house up on the hill. That's a pretty spooky-looking place. I wouldn't be at all surprised if there were a ghost or two lurking around in there.
Do you think we could see one if we went up there, Pop?
It's very possible.
Oh, Ozzie. David, your father's just kidding.
Oh, let the boys have a little fun, Harriet. After all, it's Halloween.
Come on, grab the bags, Ricky. We gotta get going.
Hey, wait for me.
Don't you think a lot of the spirit of Halloween has been lost?
Oh, I don't know, dear. The kids seem to have a good time. That's the important thing.
Oh, they pretend to enjoy it. But where's the fun? Trick or treat? Where's the adventure? What danger is there in getting a handful of cookies from Mrs. Dunkel?
You've never eaten Mrs. Dunkel's cookies.
Have we had any callers yet?
Oh, about a dozen of them. You should have seen little Julie Thornberry. She was all dressed up in one of Catherine's old dresses, and she had a stocking on her head.
Really? Oh, I'm sorry I missed it.
And little Georgie Dunkel. He had the cutest clown suit with skeletons sewed on it.
We sure have some cute little kids in this neighborhood.
I'll get it.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me get it. I want to have some fun, too. Yes?
Trick or treat.
Wait a minute. Aren't you a little big to be playing trick or treat?
Trick or treat.
How old are you?
53.
Who ever heard of a grown man playing trick or treat?
Well, my little boy is over on the next block. I'm just helping him out.
You don't even have a costume.
What do you think I am, a child? Come on, trick or treat.
A little unusual. What happens if I don't give you a treat?
Well, I sneak back later and ring your doorbell.
So what?
Then when you answer it, I punch you in the nose. Come on, trick or treat.
This is really funny, but... Here are some cookies.
Only three?
Well, they've got to go around. There are other children, too, you know.
Okay. Oh, they're chocolates. My kid likes chocolate cookies. Thanks.
Well, that's all right. How old is your little boy?
25.
One of the kids in the neighborhood, one of the older kids.
Say, would you do me a favor if you're not too busy?
What is it?
Would you stop down at the store and get some candies or something? The rate we're going to run out of stuff.
Okay, hey, what are you doing?
Just putting a couple of cookies in your pocket, in case you get stopped for trick-or-treat. Some of the boys get pretty rough.
Oh, Harriet, please, you don't think I'm afraid of a bunch of kids.
Well, suit yourself. Last Halloween, Joe Randolph bumped into the backfield of the high school football team and came home minus his trousers.
No kidding. I understand they have a pretty good team this year.
Why don't you just take these four cookies, just in case?
You better give me two more. The ends might be with him.
I got you. This is a, let go. Don't tear my pencil. The cookies were in my pocket. They're very nice cookies. Wonderful cookies.
What's this about cookies?
Oh, it's you, Thorne. What a corny trick, hiding behind the head.
Oh, just keeping in the spirit of Halloween. You should see what I did to Duncan a little while ago.
Did you scare him? What did you do?
I sneaked up on his front porch, rang the doorbell, and ran like the dickens. He didn't know what to think. Then when he went in the house, I went around to the back and started rattling the back door. Oh, boy, was he scared.
What else did you do, Patty?
Well, I waited a few minutes, then I tapped on the window and moaned like this. Ooh. And I rattled the door again, and I moaned some more. Then I began pounding on the side of the house.
Yeah. And then what?
Then the police came. Dunkle just has no sense of humor.
Did the police do anything to you?
No, just told me to stop annoying people. They took my soap away, too.
You're just a big kid at heart, aren't you, Thorny?
Well, it's all in fun. As much Halloween nowadays. Nothing happens. My boy Will's out playing trick-or-treat.
David and Ricky, too. Somehow Halloween sort of lost the old kick.
Yeah, it sure isn't like it was when we were kids.
You know, there was an old haunted house in our town, and every Halloween, us kids used to go prowling through it. Really spooky.
Sure, that's the real spirit of Halloween.
Now, you take the old McAdams place up on Franklin Avenue. There's a perfect haunted house. There's some way to sneak in there.
You mean you go in there at night?
Oh, sure. Why not?
Oh, no reason. I just never cared for the looks of the place myself. Those grotesque chimneys, staring windows. Sort of gives me the creeps.
Funny, you're kidding.
No, I'm not, Oz. There's something frightening about it. Especially at night.
What an imagination. Well, I've got to get down to the drugstore. I promised Harriet I'd get some candy and stuff.
Okay, I'll see you later. Say, when you go by the McAdams place, don't let the ghosts get you.
Well, that's right. I go right by there, don't I?
Yes, sir. Not afraid, are you?
Barney, cut it out. If you walk down the store with me, I'll buy you soda.
Place and we saw a ghost.
A real ghost?
A ghost, a real ugly one, with sharp teeth and a long nose and pointed ears and hair all over his face.
And first we thought it was Pop.
That's the nicest thing anybody's ever said about me.
I mean, we thought it was you trying to scare us.
Oh, boys, don't be silly.
You guys probably saw the moon shining through the window and your imagination did the rest.
Okay, go up and see for yourself.
Yeah, why don't you, Pop?
Well, I'd be glad to, except I promised to take your mother to the movies.
Since when?
Well, that is, I've been thinking about it all day. There's a wonderful triple Halloween show at the Bijou. The Son of Frankenstein, Dracula's Daughter, and A Date with Judy.
I wasn't counting on the movies, dear. In fact, I'd much rather you'd go up and give us a report on the ghost.
Oh, it's so silly.
Go ahead, Pop. Have some fun.
Go ahead, dear.
Well, okay. If it makes you happy, I'll go up and visit the haunted house.
Attaboy,
for
Pop.
Daddy. I thought for a minute there you were getting scared, Pop.
Oh, David.
Oh, just remember this, boys. There's not a cowardly bone in your father's body. Of course, every now and then the meat around them gets a little jumpy.
Meat around them. What am I laughing at?
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Warning to all ghosts. Beware, Ozzie Nelson will get you if you don't watch out. Yes, indeed. Ozzie Nelson, archenemy of all ghosts, goblins, spirits, and similar supernatural phenomena, is on the march. Target for tonight. The ghost that walks in the old McAdams house. See the courageous Ozzie as he strides firmly across the porch of 1847 Rogers Road. Chin up, flashlight swinging at his side. Down the steps, down the walk. And now he stops. Every muscle tense, eyes alert, nose twitching. A white, filmy object moves out of the darkness.
Who's there?
It's me, Mr. Nelson.
Oh, hello, Annie Lou.
I came over to show you my Halloween costume. I'm going to a party. Where are you going, Mr. Nelson?
Oh, I'm on an errand for the boys. They went up to the old McAdams house tonight, and they think they saw a ghost.
Really, Mr. Nelson?
Yeah, I'm going up there, you know, to prove to them it was just their imagination.
You're going in that spooky old house tonight, alone?
Well, of course.
Evidently, you haven't heard the story about the McAdams place.
Well, I've heard some silly rumor it's supposed to be haunted or something.
But it is, Mr. Nelson. I heard the whole story from the people who live next door. The story goes that years ago in Scotland, in the old Haggis Castle, the young and beautiful Lady Jane McAdams had a quarrel with her lover, Douglas McDingle McCampbell McTavish. A Scotchman.
Yes, as much.
Well, anyway, Lady Jane pushed her lover, Douglas McDingle McCampbell McTavish, down the stairs. Down, down, down he went, his head banging on each stone step. Thump, thump, crunch, crunch. His bagpipes mournfully playing, "The Campbells are coming." As he lay at the bottom of the staircase dying, Douglas McDingle McCampbell McTavish, or as they called him, Mac, as he lay at the bottom of the staircase, he took an oath.
Oh, I'd swear a little myself.
He took an oath that he'd follow Lady Jane wherever she went. His spirit would always haunt her.
Where did she go?
She came here to the United States and built the old McCaps place. Oh. And they say that on nights of a full moon like tonight, the giant ghost of Lord McTavish returns. And while the eerie notes of bagpipes ring in the night air, he prowls the house in search of Lady Jane.
He's good to die, daughter. It makes a good story, but nobody in his right mind would believe it.
Well, you believe it, don't you, Mr. Nelson?
Yes, but I'm not. I mean, of course, it's a lot of nonsense.
Okay, Mr. Nelson, but remember, if you go up there tonight and see the ghost and get a terrible fright and drop dead, don't come around saying I didn't warn you. Happy Halloween!
Harriet.
Oh, hello, dear. You back so soon?
No, I haven't gone yet. As a matter of fact, I've been thinking this over, and I don't think I'll go. The whole idea seems sort of childish.
What about the boys, dear? You promised them.
I know, but I mean, after all, isn't it silly for a full-grown man? It's only a wild goose. That's all it is.
Well, if you'd like, dear, I'll go with you.
And the boys... What did you say?
I said I'll go with you.
There are times, Harriet, when a man likes to be alone.
Oh. Well, all right, dear.
Get your coat. This isn't one of those times. Don't get nervous now, dear. Just keep cool.
Oh, I'm cool, all right. Matter of fact, I'm shivering a little.
Just hold my hand good and tight.
I can't.
Mm-hmm.
You're squeezing mine so hard the fingers are asleep.
Sorry. Is that better?
It's better. How do we get through this iron fence?
There's a gate here someplace, I think. It'll probably be bolted and spoil all our fun. They usually have a huge lock on these things and thick chains. Now, here we are. Oh.
Locked?
No.
Well, push it open.
Here, will you take the flashlight a second? Thanks. And the baseball bat, too.
Ooh. Doesn't this place look weird?
Yes, it is pretty spooky in that. Shall I sing something to keep your nerve up?
If you want to, dear.
It'll keep you from getting scared. Did you ever think, as the hearse goes by, someday
You are going to die. There's a spook in the meadow.
Dear, dear, shh. It might frighten the ghosts. Must be a haunted house. The door squeaks.
I don't know why you insisted on coming along, Harriet. I could just as easily have come by myself.
Ozzie, something has hold of my coat.
Yeah, that's me.
Who closed the door?
Didn't you?
No.
Oh, it must have been the wind. Gee, this place sure looks creepy with the moon streaming through the windows. What was that?
Now, just don't be frightened. I'm right beside you.
Ozzie, there's something in this room. It's coming toward us.
It's getting closer. Harry, quick, my baseball bat.
Hey, Oz, careful with that. Do it. Oh.
Hello, Harriet.
You old trickster.
Oh,
party.
Just thought I'd have a little fun with all the talk that's been going around about this place.
So you're the ghost David and Ricky saw. I should have guessed by the description. You should have a bagpipe, though, Thorny.
A bagpipe?
Well, sure, haven't you heard? This place is supposed to be haunted by a Scotch ghost who plays the bagpipe. And each night he comes down the stairs playing some old... Well, you do have one, Thorny. Where is it? Well, you sure play awful.
Worse than you think. I don't play at all.
Did I hear a bagpipe? Listen, I can hear it plain as day.
Ozzie, up there, the head of the stairs.
The ghost.
The ghost of Lord McTavish. Well, we've seen it. Let's go.
Now, let's all keep calm about this. We're just a little quiet. Oz,
it's getting late, Thorny. Let's get out of here.
Ozzie, you're carrying my coat. Wait.
Oz, the door won't open. I keep turning my hand on it. It won't open.
Stop it, Thorny. You've got hold of my nose.
This way, boy. Thorny, the door's over here.
Follow me. I'll make one of my own.
No, thanks. I can't understand it. There must be some scientific explanation. Did I seem very scared out there?
No, not especially.
I mean, did I act in any way that might give somebody the impression that this illusion we saw frightened me?
No, you were very level-headed about it. Of course, it was the first time I've ever seen you jump a 7-foot fence.
I didn't think I could fool you. That thing, whatever it was, scared the daylights out of me.
I was plenty scared myself. I can't figure out those bagpipes.
No, and then what about the ghost?
Oh, well, yes, of course, the ghost, too.
Harriet, what are you stuffing behind the sofa pillow?
Oh, nothing, dear, just some old papers and things.
Wait a minute, let me see that.
It's only an old sheet.
You'll get the couch dirty. It's got cobwebs. Cobwebs!
How about a little more coffee?
And there's Ricky's baseball bat, the one I... Harriet, if you'd like to make a little confession, I'll listen. But if you'd rather not, I'd rather you would.
All right, dear. It's just the boys and I thought it'd be nice if you could have a little fun on Halloween. You told them how much you enjoyed going to some haunted house. So we thought that if we could sort of... Ozzie, listen.
I'm listening. Go on.
No, listen. The bagpipes.
Yeah.
I hear the bagpipes again.
So do I.
Hey, Pop, can we have a dime?
Boys, listen. Do you hear bagpipes playing?
Sure, that's what we're on the dime for. He's out front now.
Who's out front?
Mr. Campbell, the man with the Scotch Plaid ice cream truck.
The Scotch Plaid ice cream truck?
Well, sure, haven't you ever seen him? Can we have a dime, Pop?
A dime? Here's 50 cents. Stuff yourselves.
Thanks, Pop.
Oh, boy.
Hey,
how about that? The bagpipes we heard at the McAdams place were from the Scotch Plaid ice cream truck.
What a coincidence.
Oh, remarkable. You see, the Scotch Plaid ice cream truck happened to stop there. See, there are no other houses around, and nobody lives there, but he happened to stop there. Played a different tune up there, too, didn't he?
I don't remember.
Harriet, believe me, it was only the Scotch Plaid ice cream truck.
Yes, I know, dear.
I'll say it just once more. The bagpipes we heard at the McAdams place were from the Scotch Plaid ice cream truck.
Okay, dear, you've convinced me.
I wish I could convince myself. I'd like to get some sleep tonight.
Oh, come on, dear. Put out the light. Let's go to sleep.
In a few minutes, Harriet. I just want to finish this article. Debunking the spook.
Debunking the spook?
Yeah, the man who wrote it spent the night in a house that was supposed to be haunted. As I sat there in the darkness, I could hear the clock in the village striking 12. Now was the witching hour. If ever the dead lived, now was the time they must rise from the grave. I stood up and dared the ghost to appear. I said, if you were a ghost, I dare you to strike me dead. Silly article.
What happened next?
Well, then, let's see. He goes on to...
Yes?
The article ends right there.
Oh, come on, dear. I'm tired. I want to go to sleep.
You know what might be fun? Let's sleep with the lights on tonight.
Week to another adventure of Ozzie and Harriet, starring Ozzie Nelson and Harriet Hilliard.
And remember, America's finest silver plate is 1847 Rogers Brothers.
Yes, Harriet, America's finest silver plate is 1847 Rogers Brothers.
Appearing in support of Ozzie and Harriet were John Brown, Janet Waldo, Henry Blair, Tommy Bernard, and Jack Kirkwood. Original music was composed and conducted by Billy May. This program originates in the Hollywood studios of the National Broadcasting Company and is also broadcast over the Trans-Canada network of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This adventure of Ozzie and Harriet will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service.
The camels are coming. No, Lord McTavish.
Ozzie.
It's a ghost.
Ozzie, wake up. What's all the racket, Mom? Daddy's having a nightmare.
Is that what he's doing? That noise really scared us.
Well, it frightened me, too.
Okay, now we're even.
From October of 1948, it's been The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet in the Haunted House. In a moment, James Stewart starring in The Six Shooter as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
The Six Shooter brought James Stewart to the NBC microphone in September of 1953 in a fine series of folksy Western adventures. Stewart was never better on the air than in this drama of Brent Ponsett, former drifter created by Frank Burt. Ponsett was a wanderer, an easygoing gentleman, and, when he had to be, a gunfighter. Stewart was right in character as the slow-talking maverick who usually blundered into other people's troubles and sometimes shot his way out. Unfortunately, the program came too late and lasted only one season. It was a transcribed show sustained by NBC and directed by Jack Johnstone. Basil Adlam provided the music and Frank Burt wrote the scripts. Hal Gibney announced. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Jimmy Stewart starring in The Six Shooter and Duel at Lockwood from 1953. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
James Stewart as The Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl. Its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter. A transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends. Now, in just a moment, you'll hear Act One of The Six Shooter. But first, I want to be sure that all of you know that beginning next week, we change our day and time of broadcast. Instead of Sundays, we'll be on the air Thursday evenings. For time of broadcast, please consult the listing in your local newspaper. Now, Act One of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart.
Wes!
What are you hollering about, Jim Cassidy?
I'm looking for Wes, Miss Singer. You know where I can find him?
Lockwood, maybe.
No, ma'am. He ain't in town this morning. I just come from there.
The jail in Lockwood. That's where he might be.
Now, Miss Singer, Wes ain't in jail no more. That's all over now.
All over?
Sure. And nobody's apt to try arresting him again, either.
They'll arrest him again, Jim, someday. Don't make no mistake about that. They'll arrest him or they'll kill him.
We all gotta go sooner or later, Granny.
Oh, Wes,
but if I was as close to my time as you are to yours, I wouldn't be talking about killing and dying so much.
Your time's closer than you think, Wes. Maybe even closer than mine.
Doggone it, Wes. She told me you wasn't even to home.
Granny's getting cantankerous in her old age, that's all. But what do you want?
Nothing special. Nothing special. I just thought maybe you'd like to know Britt Ponsett's in Lockwood.
Ponsett?
Yeah. He's staying at the hotel.
Well, why didn't you say so before?
Well, what's the difference? You wasn't serious the other day. Why, Wes, you couldn't have been. He's the six shooter.
You'll find out whether I was serious or not. I'll be in Lockwood at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Maybe Ponsett will be gone.
He won't leave. Not if he hears I'm coming in to pay him a visit.
You mean you want folks to know what you're aiming to do?
Sure, why not?
Well, Sheriff Hittleman ain't gonna like the idea. He made that plain enough last week.
You think I'd let Ben Hittleman get in my way? Well, I grant you it wouldn't mean much, killing an old geezer who should have been put out to pasture 10 years ago.
Wes, you...
But if he asks for it, I reckon I'll have to oblige him. Now go on, spread the word. We ought to draw a good-sized crowd, the six-shooter and me.
Well, as soon as we'd finished fencing in the last couple of thousand acres on the Tip Top Ranch, old man Jeffers sent me into Lockwood to get some signs printed up. He wanted everybody to know that he owned the biggest spread in this part of the state, and he figured posting these signs every quarter of a mile or so would do the trick. Of course, the word had to be just right. He wrote it all down so I wouldn't forget it. Tip Top Ranch, property of Rex Jeffers. Keep out. This means you. Trespassers will be shot at sight. If you ain't able to read this notice, keep out anyway. Rex Jeffers means what he says. Signed, Rex Jeffers. It's Thursday night when I got into town and the office of the Lockwood Clarion was closed, but first thing Friday morning, I headed over to give Pete Drum the order. Pete was the owner of the Clarion.
What in thunder's Rex thinking of, Britt? Folks all know where the tip-top starts in and where it leaves off. Besides, I thought he had a fence around it now.
He has, but I guess maybe Rex feels that ain't enough.
Oh, 2,000 posters, just so he can see his name in print. All right, I'll do them. But it'll cost him $15, that's my price.
$15?
Can't be done for a cent less. Paper's expensive, Britt.
Well, how soon do you figure you can get at it, Pete?
Oh, I don't know. I got me a few more of these auction handbills and all. Okay, then I suppose I can shift over to your order. Well, it's a good thing you're coming to town today, Wes.
Oh?
Monday I start getting ready for next week's paper. That ties me up clear into Thursday morning. And the way things have been happening around here lately...
Well, what do you mean, Pete?
Now, don't tell me that you ain't heard.
No, can't say I have.
Well, sir, Lockwood's got a brand new gunfighter.
Oh, gunfighter?
Just a kid, but he's faster than grease lightning. The first thing you know, Wes Singer will be just about as well known as Sam Bass, or Bill Longley, or any of the rest of them dead eyes.
Wes Singer?
Uh-huh. Two killings in less than a month. That's what has got to his credit so far.
Mm-hmm.
Wyatt Barker, he was the first. Wyatt and Wes got into some kind of a mix-up over to Charlie Jensen's place. Well, sir, Wes beat him to the draw and pumped four shots into Wyatt's body before it even hit the floor.
You don't say.
And afterwards, he just stood around there and he waited for Sheriff Hittleman to take him in for questioning. Why, he acted like he didn't have a worry in the world. And as things worked out, he was right. There was nothing the sheriff could charge him with, seeing as how Wyatt was already drawing his gun when Wes cut loose.
Uh-huh.
Oh, just that's enough of them handbills. Now, now, what happened to that paper you gave me, Fred?
Oh, that?
Well, you know the wording on it for your poster?
Oh, here it is. Right here.
Thank you. Let's see. I suppose Rex Jeffers wants his name in the biggest type I've got.
Yeah, I reckon he'd like to have it stand out good and plain.
Oh, yes, he would. Well, I guess this'll have to do. It was big enough for Lincoln's assassination. It ought to be big enough for Rex. Anyhow, like I was saying, folks just didn't know what to make of Wes Singer and the way he'd killed Wyatt Barker. They wasn't sure whether it was one of those times when a young fella just sort of flies off the handle and then settles down again afterwards. Or if Wes would take up gunslinging for a whole career. And about 10 days later, they found out.
Uh-huh.
It was on a Wednesday when he come riding down Main Street again. And we was all kind of curious to see how he'd behave. So some of us sort of moseyed over to Charlie Johnson's place when he went inside. And we'd no more than got there before he was in a mix-up with Todd Apple.
That's so.
Britt, I tell you, if I hadn't seen it myself, I wouldn't have believed it. Wes outdrew Todd by almost a full second. Now, you've got to give the devil his due. Wes Singer is a fast man with a six-shooter. And I ought to know. I've seen the best. I've seen that gun of yours in action, Brett.
Well, that was some time ago.
Oh, you're still walking around on your hind legs? That's a pretty good sign you ain't completely out of practice.
Well, what about the sheriff? Didn't he arrest young Singer after the second shooting?
Oh, sure. He arrested him. Take a look at last week's clarion. Let's see. Oh, it's right there on the counter behind you there.
Hmm? Oh. Was it Wes Singer acquitted? Jury finds Todd Apple killing was self-defense, huh?
Well, I guess they had to rule it that way since both men was armed, but Sheriff Hittleman, he sure didn't like it. He told Wes the next time he come into town stirring up trouble, he wouldn't be alive for no trial afterwards.
Well, Ben Hittleman's a man of his word. Singer ought to know that.
Sheriff ain't as young as he used to be, Britt. And he slowed down some these last few years. He slowed down a lot. Well, you take last winter when he went after Jake Gordon. If Jake's gun hadn't jammed, Ben wouldn't be here now. And believe me, Jake couldn't hold a candle to young Singer. No, not a candle. Doggone it, what happened to that other cave? I was sure I had two of them.
Yeah, speaking of the sheriff, yeah, I think maybe I'll wander over and see how he's getting along. His office still around the corner?
Yeah, same place as always.
I'll drop back and see you later,
Britt. Okay, Britt. But you take it easy.
Well, Lockwood never had been what you might call a real peaceful town. They'd had their share of gunfighters and shootings, no doubt about that. But Ben Hillman, he'd managed to keep things pretty well under control, so I figured he'd find some way of handling this Wes Singer. As I turned the corner, I got a little glimpse of Ben through the side window of his office. He's putting on his hat, getting ready to go out somewhere. Well, George Pete was right. Ben had aged. Even more than I expected. He was carrying some extra weight around his middle, too. Maybe that's what made him look shorter than I remembered him. His mustache had turned to kind of a brownish gray. Well, I opened the door and stepped inside. And for a minute or so, Ben didn't say anything. He just sort of stared at me, frowning. And then he sighed and took off his Stetson.
Hello, Britt.
Hi, Ben.
I heard you was in town. I'm just going to start looking for you.
Oh, well, I guess I saved you the trouble, huh?
Yeah. How long you figure on staying in Lockwood, Britt?
Well, the rest of the day, maybe part of tomorrow. Depends on how fast Pete Drum finishes up some printing he's doing for me. What's the matter? You anxious to get rid of me?
No. If you were to run off now, that'd turn him into a holy terror for certain. Say you left because you were scared of him. You know, holding him back after that.
Well, now, just what the Sam Hill are you talking about, then?
You ever hear of a fella called Wes Singer? Lives out east of town?
Yeah. Pete was just telling me about him.
Well, it seems he's spoiling for a gunfight with you.
With me?
Yes.
Why, I never laid eyes on the man in my life.
Well, he knows you, at least by reputation. He got to shooting off his mouth the other day, telling some of his pals how he could out-trigger any man in the state. One of the boys who was listening brung up your name, said he bet you could teach Wes a few things about slapping leather.
I say.
Of course, Wes had to back up his bragging. He told him if he was ever to come around Lockwood, he'd show him who was the best shot. He'd show everybody.
Oh, well, I imagine that's just so much talk.
At the time, maybe. But you're in town now. And if Wes don't do something about it, well, he ain't going to look like much. Besides, you're kind of a tempting target, Britt.
Hmm? Well, what are you talking about, Ben?
You're the six-shooter, aren't you? Any young gunfighter would put a bullet into you, well, that'd give him a real claim to fame.
Oh, well, it's crazy, Ben. He doesn't have any cause to pick a fight with me.
They're all crazy, Britt. Gunslingers like Wes. The idea of getting killed themselves, it don't even enter their heads. If it did, they wouldn't be gunslingers. Well, you better get over to the hotel.
Hmm?
The word is Singer will get to town around 4:00. I want you out of the way until I've finished with him.
Until you finish with him?
I warned him the next time he come into Lockwood and the prod, he'd have to answer to me.
Oh. You gonna shoot it out with him?
If I have to.
You sure you can handle him, Ben?
Of course I can. No, Britt. No, I ain't sure. He's young. He's awful fast.
Yeah, that's what Pete said.
But I gotta try. If it turns out that I ain't still man enough, well, I always knew that sooner or later one of them would come along who was younger and faster.
Now, listen, Ben, you know, he's gunning for me, not you.
That ain't the point, Britt. I'm the one who laid down the law. Told him what I'd do if he ever tried to pull off another shooting spree.
Sure, I know.
So it's my job to stop him. Oh, you might be a better match for Wes. I don't deny that. And if he should get past me, not that he will, you understand, but if he should, well, then...
Yeah?
But I just couldn't step back and let you take him on first. Why, folks would never pay no heed to me afterward. They'd say I'd talked big to Wes, but it was your gun he'd listen to. You see my point, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I see your point, Ben.
We'll return to James Stewart as the Six Shooter in just a moment.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
You sure couldn't blame Ben for feeling the way he did. He was the sheriff, and if Wes Singer came into Lockwood bound and determined to have another gunfight, well, Ben would just have to take a stand, that's all. And I sure didn't like the idea. A young fella I'd never even met up with was gunning for me, and somebody else was going to try to hold him off. No, that's just didn't... Not that I was anxious to get mixed up with him or anything, but I just... Well... Anyway, as long as Ben had made up his mind, there wasn't much I could do about it one way or the other, at least for the time being. So I moseyed over to the hotel. The clerk stopped me as I was passing the desk. He pointed to a woman sitting on the other end of the lobby. He said she'd been waiting for me to come in. Elderly lady, white hair, wrinkled yellow face with a blue straw bonnet tied under her chin. Ma'am,
Yes?
My name's Ponsett, ma'am. Britt Ponsett.
Oh. Would you mind sitting down here, Mr. Ponsett?
Sure.
It's about Wes.
Oh, yes, yes.
West Singer, that is. I'm his grandma.
I see. Uh-huh.
You know what he aims to do this afternoon, Mr. Ponset?
Well, I'd heard some talk about it, yes, ma'am.
It ain't just talk. He means it. He means to kill you.
Now, don't get too upset about it, Miss Singer. There's probably won't be any trouble between me and Wes.
What do you mean?
Well, Sheriff Heddleman will be waiting for him, and if Wes starts anything, he'll more likely land in jail.
There ain't no jail could hold him anymore. And Ben Hittleman won't be able to arrest him again, neither. He'll shoot Ben without batting an eye.
I'm afraid I don't understand you, Miss Singer. I figured you were worried about Wes. I thought that's why you wanted to talk to me.
Worried about him? I'm worried about all the men he's going to murder if somebody don't stop him. Men like Wyatt Barker and Todd Apple. Ben Hittleman, he'll be next.
Uh-huh. Well, just what is it you want from me, Mrs. Singer?
I want you to kill Wes. I want you to shoot him down like you'd shoot down a mad dog. You're the six shooter. You're the only one who'd have a chance against him.
Well, now, Sheriff Hittleman's the law in this town, Mrs. Singer. It ain't up to
me. Law? What kind of law is it to turn Wes loose after his other killings? He ain't fit to live, Mr. Ponset. Maybe it's my fault he turned out the way he did. Maybe if his Ma and Pa had been here to raise him. But they wasn't. I'd done my best.
Of course you did, Miss Singer. Of course.
He couldn't have been born mean. The meanness wasn't in his blood. I don't know how it got into him.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes it's pretty hard to explain a thing like that.
There's only one way he can end up. He'll be killed sooner or later. I'd even thought about doing it myself. Maybe it's my duty.
No, you shouldn't be talking like this, ma'am.
You've got to kill him, Mr. Ponset, today, this afternoon, before anybody else's blood is on his hands.
Well, now, I understand how you feel, Miss Singer, but my trying to kill Wes wouldn't... I just don't see how that'd be the answer.
Then what is the answer? I racked my brain. I asked God's help, done everything I could think of. What is the answer?
Well, I'm sorry, ma'am. I'm afraid I just don't know. It was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon when Mrs. Singer left the hotel. I watched her get into her buggy and drive off. She sat there stiff, tall, her eyes straight ahead, not looking one way or the other. And I waited until she dwindled down to just a little speck, and then I walked outside. There was a kind of a stillness in the air, like on a hot summer day just before a thunderstorm. The town was practically deserted. Nobody was in the stores, nobody in the street. Nobody but Ben Hittleman.
Britt, I told you to keep out of sight.
Yeah, I know, Ben.
Now, you get back at the hotel before it's too late.
I'm not waiting in the hotel, Ben.
What?
No, I made up my mind. I've decided to take a little ride this afternoon.
Ride? What are you talking about?
Well, I thought maybe I'd head over that way, toward those hills over there.
And run right into West Singer?
Well, I suppose we might meet up if he's coming in that direction.
You know darn well he's coming from that direction. I told you he lives east of town.
Now that I think of it, I guess you did, yeah. Well, I'll be seeing you.
Now you listen to me, Britt.
Now, I have listened to you, and I see your point, Ben. If there's a gunfight here in Lockwood, or if it looks like there's going to be one, well, it's up to you to do something about it.
Well, ain't that what I've been telling you?
Sure, yeah. But on the other hand, whatever happens outside of town, beyond the city limits, that is, well, I don't see that that's any of your business.
Officially, no, but...
Well...
Britt, I won't let you do it. I know what'll happen between you and Singer. If you do get the draw on him, you'll hold off. You won't kill him. But if he gets the draw on you...
So long, Ben.
Britt!
I didn't ride very far, just a couple of miles. Then Anna reined up near a clump of spruce. Whoa, boy. Whoa, Scar. Scar wandered around nibbling at some tufts of dried up grass, and I settled down in the shade to wait. About 10 minutes later, I saw him coming toward me. Not hurrying, just plodding along, slow, easy-like. Of course, I couldn't be sure that this was young Singer, but it seemed more than likely that it was him. And when he got close enough so I could see his face, well, there wasn't much doubt about it. He was young, all right. Appeared to be younger than his years, just a kid. Not a bad-looking boy, either. But there was something about his eyes and the way they kept darting from side to side like an animal on the prowl. But when he saw me, he reined up and slid out of the saddle.
Howdy. You ride out here from Lockwood, mister?
That's right.
I hear Britt Ponsett's in town. Is that a fact?
He was in town.
Was? I might have known he'd run out on me. You got any idea which way he headed?
Yeah. I'm Britt Ponsett.
What?
That's right. There's something I can do for you? For a second, his eyes stopped moving and just stood there as if he didn't quite know what to do. But it didn't take him long to make up his mind. His right hand whipped down toward his holster so fast that it was all I could do to get hold of the shotgun before he finished his draw. And even then, it looked like he might just go ahead and squeeze the trigger, but he managed to hold himself back. We weren't more than about 8 feet apart, staring at each other. His revolver aimed right at my face, and the shotgun I'd borrowed from Pete Drum pointing straight at his belly.
What are you trying to pull, mister?
How's that?
That shotgun. What's the matter with your six shooter?
Nothing. Nothing at all. All right, go ahead. You've been telling everybody around town you're going to kill me. All right, go ahead. You couldn't miss me. Go on, you couldn't miss me, not at this range.
Sure, but...
But I'd still be able to let go with a blast, too, you know. Is that what you're worried about, Wes? And I guess it'd tear a pretty big hole through you.
I ain't afraid. You think I'm a coward, don't you?
I'll tell you one thing, I think. You know, you never faced up to the fact that you might get killed in one of these gunfights of yours. As long as you got off the first shot, you figured the worst the other fella could do was just to nick you, if he was lucky. All right. Now, you can get off the first shot now. But if you do, I don't need to be able to aim this shotgun. I just couldn't help hitting you.
You're loco, Ponson. We'd both be dead.
Yeah. Well?
You can't expect a man to commit suicide.
All right, I'm waiting, Singer.
You know there's no way to... You know I don't dare...
That's right.
But what do you expect me to do?
I expect you to put your gun away and get out of here. And you'd better not come into Lockwood again looking for trouble, because this isn't the only shotgun in town. Well, after a minute or so, he turned and he climbed on his horse. And I don't know for sure what happened to him after that. I heard that he moved on farther west, and finally got into a gunfight with somebody who outgrew him. I guess it was bound to happen, of course. I just don't understand what gets into a fella like him.
Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt and is written by him. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture, The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Elvia Allman, Sam Edwards, Will Wright, Howard McNear, and Bert Holland. Special music for this program was by Basil Atlin, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental.
From 1953, it's been Jimmy Stewart starring in The Six Shooter with Duel at Lockwood. That's all the time we have for today, but join us again next week at the same time and invite a friend to listen and together enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those exciting days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show.
Preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions. All rights reserved.
Supported Swing Street Radio, KSSR DB San Francisco, where the big bands swing.